always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast, brought to you in part by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and get $50 of free lineups when you use it and sign up with a $5 lineup of your own. Today on the show, we're going to be joined by Kirk Henderson of Pod Maverick, of Mavs Moneyball, friend of the show, friend of me personally, and Luka Doncic fan. And we're going to be kicking off the series of Lakers in review that we're going to be running through the end of the playoffs and as we get ready for the offseason and stuff like that. Harrison brought it to my attention late in yesterday's episode that this is like asking somebody's ex to review their new relationship. So my bad, Kirk, for putting you into that situation. But other than that, Kirk, how are you holding up?
I'm okay. Basketball's been over for me for a while. I did not watch a single game of the first two rounds of the playoffs, which is not great considering I also work for a company called Offside, as you do. And it was hard to, you know, a little hard to do basketball takes. You're not watching any basketball, but, you know, the conference finals were fun. And, you know, I'm really getting into the draft. There's a lot of like draft. My team and I did a mock draft last night where we randomized teams that we took. We did it, you know, we were like five guys and we all were GMs. And what I learned last night is starting at either pick five or pick nine, the draft is going to be insane because like the Thunder have two picks and the Hornets have two picks between picks 11 and 18. So two teams have four picks in a seven pick range. There's like, these are going to get really odd. So like after the finals are over, there's just a lot of fun stuff to talk about still.
There really is. I've had a blast with these playoffs. I thought that Spurs Thunder series was really fun. And it was really fun to watch the entire country turn on OKC, you know, sit on the right side of history there. I couldn't believe that I found myself rooting for the Spurs, a franchise that I have hated for most of my adult life, but the Thunder were just that annoying. Like when you're really annoying, you need to kind of turn people off. So,
well, and they're at that point in their own building cycle where Wemby is not regularly dominant in a way that becomes fucking frustrating. He is in game. He's still quite dominant, but like, anybody that's older like me and you would remember, I think, was it 2002 or 2000? I think it was 2000, where Shaq essentially had like 33 and 15. Was that the 15 and one season? Was that
the second season was the 15 and one?
That's the one I'm thinking about. So that's 2001. That run was what, like, people that don't believe, it's like, go watch. Shaq was destroying everyone and got bored and they lost a game. That's all. That's the only reason. The Lakers got bored and they lost a game. And so it's when you're watching Wemby right now, there's not that level of just like game to game, and so they have enough guys that are fun. Dylan Harper he's not a revelation because that would imply that we didn't know, but to watch what he's doing right now in this context is really amazing. I look forward to hating the shit out of them, but I don't right now.
I the other day I saw, it was a graphic that some teenager put together on Twitter that was comparing supporting casts that guys have had over the years. And they were talking, I'd have to find it, but I'll send it to you whenever I do. But the graph had supporting casts that like Kobe has had over the years, and Shaq was one of the names on one of the supporting cast. And
I was, it's like, amazing.
Absolutely not.
It's not a slight to Kobe to be like, Shaq was the best player on that team. Like, it's okay.
Peak Shaq was the best basketball player I have ever seen.
Like, nobody, like
the most dominant basketball player I have ever seen. And he was not a member of the supporting cast.
And just like Shaq, there's this, like Wemby's going to cause guys to get drafted that wouldn't have made it to the NBA.
Yeah.
There's this, and am I allowed to curse in this?
Yeah, go for it.
There's this fucking guy out of Italy named Luigi that's 7'4" that's going to be an early second round pick. And you're going to look at this guy when you see, you remember our conversation, and he is the goofiest looking fucking dude. And he's going to get drafted because he's 7'4", because he could, in theory, cause Wemby problems. That we had whole teams of people like that. Go look at the Mavericks roster in 2000. They had eight guys, 6'9" or taller, to try to guard Shaq. 48 fouls that they wanted.
Yeah, to not. I was going to say not guard Shaq,
foul him. Yeah,
it was. Anyway. It was not to guard him. It was to foul him and send him to the free throw line. It was. Peak Shaq is just a whole nother deal. And like we are now far enough. You know, like the early aughts are now 20 plus years ago, and we are now at the stage where you and I are can be like grumpy old men and tell the kids like. I'm sorry, Shaq was just different. But anyway, that's not what we are gathered here to talk about. We're gonna sit here and talk about Luka's season, and what the Lakers are gonna be trying to do to build around Luka, and hopefully compete with Wemby and with OKC and with whatever other teams are gonna come up through the ranks over the next few years. Also, quick reminder, as always, please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Please turn on notifications for the show. Please turn on notifications for YouTube so you get the notifications for the show. And then if you guys are listening to the show in the morning via podcast, please subscribe wherever it is that you get them, preferably on Odyssey, but I truly do not care. The season that Luka had, I thought was really interesting. It was excellent. He averaged over 35 points a game. He led a team to a 16-2 record towards the end of the season as the Lakers mounted that kind of comeback late. And then, unfortunately, got hurt there right at the end of the season with an injury that held him out just long enough that he had to miss the postseason. And yet, if you hear, you know, people talk about him nationally over the course of the year, it was always what he couldn't do and what he can't do, what he isn't doing. And it was really funny over the course of the season, because I would get kind of annoyed by that. And, you know, whether it was you or Doyle or whoever it was, you know, and I would share those frustrations. They would say, yeah, for whatever reason, that's how people talk about Luka. What do you think's going on there?
In terms of how the media talks about Luka, everybody's just kind of sick of him. I mean, they're sick of him. And when you go to an even bigger media market and you get the kind of constant attention, that's just sort of the crux of it. Honestly, one of the things that I found like very annoying, and any of my former Maverick compadres that now follow the Lakers, maybe follow Fred here. Well, I don't want to piss you off with this, but it's like when SGA was shitting the bed, and he kind of did in game 6 and 7, not great, not his best performances. You have all these people out here wanting to talk about Luka. Luka never did this and that. And there's an element of basketball that the narrative structure of it, where I think it really serves guys to go away. LeBron James has never once learned this. He's never gone away. The reason so many people are frustrated with him as a concept is he has been in my life on a daily basis for 25 years.
Yeah.
We're pushing 25 realistically. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so the people who love him, love him.
Because he was there like high school, even before he got to the league, it was like a constant conversation about LeBron. Yeah. It's
the point. It's crazy. And Luka going away, not really being part of the playoffs, mentioning that he's not going to play with the Slovenian national team, which is a complicated thing, but realistically very good for his body. Him just going away for a long period of time is going to serve his narrative structure very well. People who hate him will not stop hating him, but the element of, we forgot how good this guy is capable of being is going to be a big factor heading into next year. The season this year for Luka was a fairly standard one, if I'm honest. He played really well to start the year. He got hurt at a frustrating time, carried the team during the doldrums, but not enough to really win, and then came back late, gangbusters, just absolutely, you know, throwing fireballs left and right, only to kind of get hurt. I mean, he got hurt before the Western Conference Finals run with the Mavericks in 2022. He got hurt in the playoffs against who was it again? The opening round series for the Mavericks in 2024. He gets hurt because of how he plays. Soft tissue injuries are a bitch. I don't want to make excuses for him here, but this to me
also against Minnesota. He didn't look like himself in the Minnesota series two playoffs ago.
And I think you got to kind of build that in. That's sort of where I'm heading with this, and that you have to build that in, and they have to do a better job of taking care of him. I'm not sure how though, but I will say to me, this was a very standard season in which he reminded people late March and April just how good he is. It's very frustrating he got hurt against the Thunder in the way that he did. But also, I think in terms of where the playoffs are going, I think this allows people to just sort of forget. Because in my take is out of all the superstars, including Wemby, SGA, all of these, Luka Doncic is capable of higher highs and also lower lows than any of the other superstars. It's just the way it goes. And I don't say that as criticism. It's just who he is. I've watched him since he was 16. We're going on 11 years now. It's okay. Maddening. I wish you had grown up in certain ways. I wish you would have lost weight earlier. But you know, the experience, particularly for folks who watch, this is the thing, and I'm rambling too long. I apologize. The experience of watching Luka Doncic on a night in, night out basis is really something else. Because it's a, and I wondered, I'm, because I, you know, I was in college at this point, but I wasn't watching the Lakers nightly. I was in Los Angeles in 2006. I feel like Luka on a night to night basis is what that feeling you got comparable of like watching Kobe in 2006 when you're like, oh, is he going to go for 45 tonight? Yeah. So competitive and so capable of like, oh, Luka's got 21 in the first quarter. I got to turn on the TV. And like, there just aren't many players in the NBA that does that. Like, I know everybody likes SGA and that's fine because he's, you know, he's an MVP caliber player. I know folks like Jokic, but there's not the first quarter. Oh, I'm going to turn on the TV because look at what's happened. I see the notices on my phone. So that's a lot of Luka talk for me in one sentence there.
Well, so I want to, all right. So there's a few avenues we could go off of there. We could branch off of that and I'll try to hit all of them. First off, like the point about his, you know what? No, let's start positive. To me, what really kind of turned his season around was his ability to shoot threes and knock down threes. And it just opens up everything for him. And like you're talking about, you know, with the Luka first quarter scoring binges that he would go on. They always feature a couple fuck you three-pointers, right?
Every time. Yep.
And if he hits his first couple, you're like, ooh, okay. All right. But to the other point that you made, those off nights that he has always feature one of nine from 3-point range, you know, and he just keeps firing and he keeps firing and he keeps firing. And eventually you're just like, hey man, try
something else. Shot.
Yeah. let's get something going to the basket. And what I was really kind of, most impressed by over the course of the year was actually, I thought some, maturation in terms of his basketball game. He picked up his final tee that he could before he got suspended or could get suspended. And he shut up. He stopped talking to the referees and he started talking to the referees being his outlet, his teammates became his outlet. And he started talking on defense and he started being kind of this like more positive presence, I thought, within the confines of the game. And I thought it was by far the best version of Luka. And I really find myself wondering if he also noted that in looking back on this season. But it, you know, I'm not saying one led to the other. I think the bigger issue or the bigger reason that his season turned around was his improved 3-point shooting. But I also thought that just like, I don't know, we're now old enough and aware enough of ourselves of like, or, you know, to be able to notice, all right, I'm being kind of crabby today. I need to stop focusing on whatever it is that I'm focusing on and just like be a better person to be around. And it like impacts everything around us, you know? And I kind of felt like we saw that from Luka. Do you think that's something he could note after a year like this season?
I mean, I think part of that has to be the relationship between him and JJ Redick. Because one of the things I will say is that in Dallas, if you read Tim McMahon's book, and I really recommend it for all Lakers fans, like you really should read this book. There's an incident that happens within the first month of Luka's rookie season where he lost, like Rick Carlisle lost Luka. They played together for 4 more years. But on a personal level, he burnt a bridge very early on. Carlisle is a notorious asshat. And I think he went too far and didn't understand something. And he really kind of drove a wedge between Dennis Smith and Luka. Which is like Luka didn't appreciate it. And I say that to be the next coach they brought in was, Jason Kidd, and Jason Kidd is a fucking snake. And also a coward,
and now unemployed.
I'm sure he'll get hired by somebody soon, 'cause he's good at getting hired. But he never had a direct conversation with Luka about anything. Like you could just tell, they might have had casual conversations, but they never had serious conversations. Like Kid knew where his bread was buttered and wasn't interested in challenging Luka occasionally through the media. And I'm sure maybe you could tell, hey, Kirk, there's things that happen from behind closed doors.
I remember it was fairly early on in Kid's tenure. He like just straight up said Luka needs to stop bitching to referees. Mm-hmm. And I was like,
he's right, but
you could talk. He was right, but that, I don't know that's how I would go about that. Yeah,
and I think that Redick, you know, having played a half season with Luka, had some insight into that because Redick was a dick, is a dick. I mean, it's you know, he was uncoachable. You know,
Duke guy.
Yeah, like. And there were things that happened to him at Duke that I think looking back on now, he's able to say and use that because. You know, younger audience members may not believe this, but like Redick was a Luka level prospect in college in terms of just attention, maybe not raw talent,
agreed.
Like the whole, like he was hated by America, and loved it. And like, there's just gotta be like, there's some relatability factor there. And, you know, one thing I think Redick that works both for and against him is, he really says what's on his mind all the time to everyone. And so I believe the stuff he says in the media, he also says to Luka. And at a certain point you as a player, if you have authority figures in your life, just as a human being, you either have to take their advice or that relationship needs to end. And you're not going to fire Redick halfway through Luka's first full season. And I think that some of the things maybe might've started to stick whether he wanted it to or not. And you know, whether that carries over, it's hard to say. The season is so long, so long, and having veterans, that will redirect you as a person. Like, did you see
Vanderbilt?
Dylan Harper got grabbed. Who it was somebody got fouled really bad by Alex Caruso in Game 7 and went to the ground. It was like the one where he was pulled down. I can't remember who got fouled. But Harper goes down and grabs his teammate and bear hugs him and essentially prevents him from going at the ref because they called it a Castle foul. It might have been Castle, but it was one of those plays where you go, oh, that. And like, frankly, I think Luka like needs more of that. You need to get somebody to be like, God damn, get out of my face. Like, that's fine because like Luka doesn't care. He'll circle, like, it's competitive stuff. But like getting out of the ref's faces and that sort of element. You know, not doing this. You can't see my palms. Like I always tell my kid this in basketball. I'm like, if I see your palms, you are toast. Cause that means at that point you're making an excuse for something. And that's one of Luka's biggest challenges is just like, you got to focus on what's at hand. There's too many plays in basketball. Too many mistakes happen. Turn the page and move ahead. You know,
ironically, because I don't think he's going to be a Laker next year. That guy was Vando. Like there was that clip of Vanderbilt like standing up, and I don't know if you saw it. JJ and Luka were kind of going back and forth. Luka's walking to the sideline and he goes to turn because I guess JJ had said like one more thing, you know, that got Luka to turn back towards him. And Vando stands up and just starts clapping.
Yeah, I saw it. It was fun. And
it was incredible. Like Vando was just like, nope, you cannot get by me. I'm going to clap right here. And now, unfortunately, like I said, I don't think Vando and JJ are a mix basketball wise. And so I don't think Vando is going to be on the team next year. But that guy was kind of Vando this season on a couple of occasions. I agree that, like, you know, somehow, some way the Lakers are going to kind of have a Luka whisperer vet around at all times. And by the way, that's a perfectly fine use of a roster spot. You know,
sure.
Udonis Haslam there in Miami for a long time, and Jared Dudley there for the Lakers when they won the championship was that guy. And now it's, you know, we'll see who that guy might be here with the Lakers moving forward. Luka's shooting, is that just like how this is going to go based on your experiences, right? Where, you know, he's either the hottest man on earth or you're begging him to, you know, get something going to the basket?
Yeah, I think it's just who he is. I know that there's some national reporters that very much say Luka needs to get other guys involved earlier. And, you know, maybe that's what a Kawhi Leonard does, probes around, and if shots aren't there, he's going to come back to it later. Luka's strength is getting going early. It just is. It's who he's always been. And would you like to see a little bit different of a shot diet? Absolutely. I do think that changes if you get a different role man. That's a big part of this. And, you know, because Luka does like making the pass. That's one thing always drives me nuts when I hear people say, oh, Luka's first instinct is the score. Scoring's easier for him in the NBA than it was in Europe. He said that over and over. He's like, it's easier for me to do this stuff. So, because there's a lot more contact. And so I think that you just kind of live with it. And, you know, there's going to be nights where it looks awful. There's going to be quarters where it looks awful. But then every now and again, you're just treated to the showtime element where it fits the uniform and it fits the moment and it's otherworldly. And, you know, looking at his age, he's 27, turns 28 next February. You get about 3 years of this, I think, with his body type. I think he'll be good till he's 35, but I think that like that changes. He doesn't want to play forever. He's already mentioned that, but I think you sort of live with it and just go from there.
You kind of touched on, I think, probably the most important factor. Like I kind of framed this episode in terms of headlining it and writing the description out, at least for now, as far as like, what can Luka do to get better? But I actually think a more prescient question is, or a more pressing question is what can the Lakers do to help Luka get better? And you noted the center spot. There's been a hot debate basically since the season ended as to whether or not Austin Reeves, and Luka as a pairing can work. And then obviously the Lakers need to, whether it's for Luka or just in general, need to get more athletic. Where would you start in building a roster around Luka, addressing the center spot? Do you think Austin can work there, or do you think the Lakers need to get more athletic before they work on anything, any individual position?
It's so
across
hard.
The roster.
It's so hard. It's so hard. I've been thinking about this ever since Luka was traded, because free agency is effectively dead. Trades are going to be weird, and the Lakers don't have a lot of assets, and the draft is not a viable tool for the Lakers at this point. It's not to say you can't get a good player, but like if the Lakers were to take like Koa Pete 25, he doesn't do anything for the Lakers. He just It's not to say he's not good or couldn't be good, but he doesn't do anything for what you're trying to build next year. I personally prefer the center out approach. Here's why.
Yeah,
I watched Luka with hilariously bad centers. Hilariously bad centers from 2018 to 2024. Derek Lively was a gamble in that playoffs or in that 2023 draft. And then they picked up
Gafford.
Gafford. And so those two combined were better than all the other centers the Mavericks had. And I don't want to include Kristaps Porzingis in that per se, because he was more of a stretch five than the rim rolling center. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can put a value on an incredible rim roller playing with Luka. The number
rim runner.
Rim runner, yes.
I mean, both of those. Yeah.
Yes, both of them. Because look at the Mavericks as a team, and I cannot remember the number, but in the playoffs, heading into the finals before Boston, at that point, I think had more dunks than any team in the playoffs in history up until that point, because Luka was just throwing dimes to those two.